Welcome to Insights for Manufacturing, the podcast that supports the UK manufacturing sector. Hosted by Jeff Beecham, the manufacturer's recruiter. Hello and welcome to Insights for Manufacturing. I'm delighted to welcome my guest today, Steve Banton, who I'm sure you'll know. Steve is channel manager at ABB Robotics UK and a council member at BARA, the British Automation and Robotics Association. So welcome to the show, Steve. How are you doing?
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for the really positive introduction. Yeah, I'm really well. You find me in quite a windy and wet part of the country today. Cornwall's not having its very best day. But yeah, really well, thank you. And excited to have a good chat about the engineering and manufacturing industries that we're both so passionate about.
Absolutely. And it's no better here in Birmingham today, by the way. It's awful outside. So let's have some fun indoors on the podcast.
Absolutely.
I mean, you and I have known each other for, two or three years or so. We've been connecting on LinkedIn, usually bump into each other at different exhibitions. And, yeah, you know, absolutely. You seem to be out and about all over the country. If anybody follows your posts, you know, they'll know that you're, you know, a strong advocate for not just for your business, ABB, but, you know, robotics and automation in general. And you do a great job of, you know, getting some miles under your belt, visiting all of your, you know, channel partners and getting out there in the market. So if anybody's going to know what's hot in the robotics arena currently, Steve, I would suggest you're as good a place as any to start. So what's the latest? What's hot in the robotics arena currently?
I mean, robotics is one of those fantastic industries where there's lots of things happening all the time and there's new technologies coming to the forefront that keep the industry really exciting. I think for us as ABB, we're currently focusing heavily and fully embracing the AMR technology that we've been massively buying into over the last few years. Back in 2021, we acquired ASTI, which was a Spanish AMR company.
Yep.
And since then, we've been working really hard to make that business globally renowned and rebranded as ABB. And we've been making sure that the products that we're going to bring to market within that business line are world class. So we do have some really exciting products coming to market, like our Visual Slam, which is going to be a whole new way of navigating and creating paths for the AMRs to travel on. So this is a really unique offering to the marketplace. And we're really excited to see that come to some of the biggest companies that we deal with, some of the blue chips that are really excited to use it and see how that's really going to build our AMR business going forward. But to make that a very successful part of our business, we have to see what other technologies can interact with the AMR systems that we have. And that's where we're so heavily moving into the AI-based systems that work hand in hand with AMRs. And we've just announced an acquisition of a company called 7sense. Last year, we also acquired a company called MeshMind. Now, the 7sense acquisition is really exciting because what 7sense does essentially is give robots eyes and ears, which might sound a little bit peculiar, but the technology in the AI really does make those AMR solutions a lot smarter. And hopefully going forward, we'll make them a lot more accessible for companies looking to improve processes, look at ways of moving products around their facilities. So I think as a hot topic and as a hot part of the industry so far, I would say AMR technology is well up on that list.
Brilliant. Okay, well, a couple of things on that. First of all, for any of the listeners or viewers that aren't familiar with AMR technology, could you just give us a couple of bullet points as to what would be a typical application or part of industry that they would be used in, Steve?
Yeah, of course. Now, obviously, AMRs are the latest buzzword within this technology, but we all know, and hopefully the listeners will have had experience with AGVs, autonomously guided vehicles. Now, these have been around for 20 plus years and have had different kinds of technology that lead them on their paths from magnetic strip to radar-based systems. Whereas what we're looking at now with the AMRs, autonomously mobile robotics, is a much more advanced way of moving products from one part of a factory to another. So some of the typical applications that we would see might be in a food and beverage manufacturing facility where pallets are picked up by AMRs and moved from the end of the production line into stores. It could be in an automotive setting where AMRs are used instead of long conveyor systems to move different parts of a car vehicle around a production facility, or it may be used as a kitting application, making sure that the side of line has the parts that it needs to complete a car in its assembly process. So they might be some of the most typical ways that we see our AMRs being used in the marketplace. Of course, in the logistics industry, you would see AMRs heavily used in the likes of the big industrial commercial warehouses for moving products around. So there are different ways in which AMRs are being used. And the way that we're focusing our AMR technology at the moment is more on those really well known emerging industries, logistics, pharma, healthcare, and then our traditional markets too, automotive, food and beverage, and any other general industry marketplace.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. And just going back to what you said at the start of that question about the giving the robots eyes and ears, it's almost like, you know, going back 100 years that there was any robots. We've got them now. They've been around for a while. With the eyes and ears thing, with these, you know, really complex vision systems and sensors and all the rest of it, it's almost like giving them eyes and ears is almost like adding a little bit more of the human back into the robot. That's how I sort of see it. It's quite surreal, really. It's almost sort of gone full circle with the use of AI. Absolutely. So brilliant. Okay, so I noticed that is it your 10th year in robotics this year, Steve?
It's my 10th year. In fact, it must be more my 11th year in sort of automation as an industry.
Yeah.
I'm moving into my 8th year with ABB. So directly within the robotics business, 8 years, but I've been on the periphery of robotics for around 11 to 12 years from my previous employment to where I am today at ABB.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of changes in that time.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the pace of technology is incredible. So what made you, you know, choose robotics as a career path in the first place?
I think you and I have discussed this before, but I really didn't start my career in this industry at the coalface of robotics and automation. If I was to step back 12, 15 years, I actually found myself working in an aquarium feeding sharks for a living.
That's right. I remember now.
And that might sound like an odd place to start this story, but I was working in that particular job, and it was brilliant. I enjoyed it so much. It was a passion that I had at the time for scuba diving and really sort of helping me develop my skills as a diver. So I took on a job literally hand feeding sharks in an aquarium in Ellesmere Port. And after a while of doing that and realizing that as much as I enjoy the role and I enjoy doing what I do, it was never going to give me a full-time career that would allow me to do the other things that I enjoy, travel, you know, going out with friends, doing all the things that you enjoy just as a person.
Yep.
So I came out of that role and I joined a company that did new installs on schools, leisure centers, and different projects. And one of the projects that we did was to put up large flat screen LED televisions at a huge, great media city installation in Manchester. So this was two back-to-back screens that were straddling some pillars in the middle of Media City. In fact, the screens are still there today.
Yeah.
And we built using a aluminium extruded profile frame to attach these panels to. And I was showing some of the guys that I know and I'm friendly with what I was doing. And one of our friends said, hey, this is what I do, but I use that same kind of profile system to make applications for app for automation and robotics, conveyor systems, linear motion systems. And my ears pricked up a little bit. I was like, hey, that's really something that I think I could enjoy. So he brought me into the business for an Austrian company that he had the UK subsidiary of. And I started learning around how to design some certain systems with conveyors, linear motion, safety fencing systems, robot bases. So I was getting this knowledge of the market, the industry, the product that I was working with. And then when that job came to its natural close and I found myself looking for a new role, I was approached by a recruiter, actually. And they said, hey, would you like to come and work for ABB? And I was like, have you heard of ABB? Have I heard of ABB? Just once or twice. Yeah, they've come across my desk.
Yeah.
And that's how I started. So I got into ABB and was an account manager in 2016. From 2016 to 2018, I was really learning the ropes about robotic sales, the technology. And I progressed from there to a channel partner role, which I found myself in today.
Yeah.
And the way that I usually round off this story is that years ago, I was feeding sharks by hand. And now I'm still working with sharks, but I've changed from the aquarium to the boardroom.
I love that. That's brilliant. Well, what a story. And yeah, I mean, automation, robotics, it's ever changing. You know, as I said earlier, the technology is moving at such a pace. It's hard for some of us to keep track of it unless you're in the thick of it. Yeah, it's a bit of a whirlwind, isn't it?
It is. And I think for me, I mean, what's a lot of people always say to me, you must have always wanted to work within robotics. You must have had your education. You must have had experience. And one thing that I'll always say to people, and I hope your listeners will take this away with them, is for me, I've always just taken as much as I could out of every opportunity that I've ever been given. And I've been very lucky to be given some fantastic opportunities in my career to date. But it's how you embrace those opportunities and how you choose to show up every day and learn in the role that you're in, how you make the very best of that opportunity that you've been given. Because only then will you become a stronger person in the role, a stronger member of the team, and you'll advance in that career. And I don't think you need to be set on a certain career from the get-go. You need to understand what you're comfortable with, what you enjoy. And once you start doing what you enjoy day to day, the work doesn't become so hard.
Absolutely. Well, there's some good advice in there. My last guest on the last episode was Rowan Crozier, the CEO at Brandauer. And one of his passions is STEM and getting more youngsters into manufacturing and engineering. Yeah. So, you know, everything that you've just said is again, another, you know, great piece of advice for youngsters considering, you know, what career path are they going to choose. And with all the technology in industry these days, it's just so much variety. But I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's, you know, go for what you're comfortable with. And I always say to people, you know, curiosity is such a superpower. If you can just let your brain just do a bit of wandering sometimes, you know, and try different things and ask yourself different questions.
Yeah,
it's a big world out there, and manufacturers just come on leaps and bounds with all the technology. And I think it still has a really, really good future.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a really exciting time to be in the industry. Absolutely.
It sure is. So let's talk a little bit more about robots then, Steve. One of the big topics across industry at the moment, everybody is aware of this, is sustainability. So what impact are robots having on that big push for more sustainability in UK manufacturing?
I think, you know, we've seen quite a change in the way that our industry and even our personal lives have been in the last few years. Your prices for energy shooting through the roof hasn't just hit us in our own back pockets at home, but it's hit businesses massively. So anything that we can do with our technology and our products to bring down the energy consumption and the efficiency and to put companies onto a greener journey, as we might say, to a more sustainable future is, you know, one of our main pillars of our business. We want to be able to start having less of a footprint globally by offering better solutions, more energy efficient solutions, and solutions that companies can, you know, when they're looking at their data, seeing how their assets are being used, they can actually have that data, you know, up to date, real time, because really using that data in the right way can show them where they're most efficient, what time of day they could maybe look at doing certain processes. But sustainability is absolutely massive in the world today. You know, we're all striving to move towards that greener future. And some of the applications that we see as a business that are really exciting, you know, a bit more emerging technology, is things like vertical farming. Vertical farming I find really, really interesting because it can take up a much smaller footprint than traditional farming does currently, always has done historically. And one of the facts that really surprised me was that vertical farming can use between 75 and 95% less water than traditional planting farming methods.
Wow. Yeah.
So as a cost saving to the producers, that's absolutely huge. And, you know, you can see these vertical farms being developed in inner city subterranean basements. You can see them being developed in huge, great tents in the middle of some of the more arid countries around the world.
Yeah.
So the ability to grow fresh produce, you know, and to do it with much less impact on the environment is really exciting. And that's something that we're seeing much more of. But I must say, one of the most exciting and interesting applications I saw when it comes to that sustainability piece was one of the ABB Yumi collaborative robots working deep in the Amazon rainforest, helping the farmers to plant saplings. So the robot was actually handling the sapling, planting it into a pot, which meant that the farmers could be doing more activities, could be more productive during their day. And isn't that what robots were meant for? To make people more productive, to give them more opportunity to go out there and do other things, more cognitively rewarding tasks. So that was one of the things that I really enjoyed seeing last year, was that application of a robot in absolutely the middle of the rainforest, taking on this application that was freeing up people to do much more, like I say, cognitively rewarding and interesting tasks.
Wow. And I mean, it's incredible that the amount of applications that, you know, robots are taking over. And I've seen clips on, I think, YouTube and on TV over recent years of sort of certain fresh produce harvesting, some of that in the UK, where they've got now robots going along. You can see them going along a field and actually picking out stuff. I mean, I've never done any fruit picking. You know, lots of foreign people used to come to the UK for jobs to earn money. And, yeah, you know, a lot of the farms used to get people, you know, en masse going into the fields, picking fruit or veg or whatever it is. And it must be backbreaking work. You imagine trying to, you know, harvest a field of asparagus or something. You've literally got to get down there and cut the thing off right at the soil level. I mean, I'd love to see more robots in the farms. You know, the farmers don't half get a bad rap.
Some really interesting points there, to be honest, Jeff. And I can actually give you a real world example of fruit picking. I was lucky to spend 12 months in Australia, and one of the jobs I did was fruit picking.
Okay.
And the product that we were picking was melons.
Right.
So having to bend down, pick up melons, throw them into a truck, 8 hours a day, backbreaking.
Absolutely
backbreaking. But it's interesting what you said about asparagus, because that is one of the applications that has had agri-farming and agri-robots actually going out there and taking on that application. The thing with asparagus, especially in the UK, is the window for actually gathering the asparagus is very, very small.
Yeah.
And that's why you'd see so little application or so little investment in having that kind of technology here in the UK, whereas sometimes they might go over to countries like Spain where the window for production is much larger, and they would have more success with that kind of application. I guess that's one of the intricacies of farming in the UK, is we have a much smaller window to grow certain fruit and veg. It was interesting to me, I was talking to my parents some years ago, and we were talking about, you know, when they were kids, the only vegetables available were what was available. If they couldn't have blueberries in December, that's because they weren't available.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, myself and my generation and the younger generations than I, we take for granted that the fruits and veg that are available to us today, you know, that's a luxury, because years and years ago, our parents wouldn't have had the opportunity to have such a rich variety of fruit and vegetables. They would have, you know, what was available in the ground at that point in time.
Seasonal. And lots of the, you know, the TV chefs and, you know, people like that are always going on about, you know, using the best produce available. And that's typically seasonal produce, isn't it? So great job for the robotics industry to be helping that along. Okay. So I was having a discussion with my son, Chris Beecham, who works for me, sort of giving him some training, if you like, on certain different technologies, scenarios. And I was sort of explaining the difference between sort of OEMs and integrators. And I know within robotics and automation systems, there's an awful lot of work that's done by integrators, and there is a big difference. Some businesses are a bit of both. In your opinion, how do you think the role of a solutions integrator has sort of changed over the, you know, the period of time you've been in the robotics sector then, Steve, sort of over 10 years? How do you think the role of an integrator has changed?
Yeah. So I mean, integrators are companies that I deal with on a daily basis, and they're a huge part of my role within ABB as channel partner manager. You know, my role is to really help develop our systems integration partners and to have them, you know, authorized as value providers, which is our channel partner program globally. Yeah. So I've had, you know, 6-7 years working with some incredible systems integration companies and seeing just how well, you know, they have their systems in place to create and design systems for end users, you know, in various different industries, whether that be food and beverage, whether that be automotive, lasers, you know, all of the ABB value providers that I look after can be found on ABB.com. And you can see the kind of expertise that each of these has. But when it comes to your question about how the systems integration companies have changed over the years, I don't think the companies themselves have had to change that much in the way that they are actually going out there to customers and trying to find new projects. I think what's changed dramatically is the technology that's available to them.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking now at different systems that can be employed. Again, AI is going to come into that a bit further down the line. But when you're considering the ease of use of programming that a lot of companies are now offering to their systems integration companies, offline programming, as an example, you know, how are they able to simulate a application for an end user so that they can really sell the idea of that system to that customer. And one of the ways that we did that with our value providers and our customers around the world is by using our offline programming software called Robot Studio.
Yep.
Now, just recently, we've put up a new update of Robot Studio, which is Robot Studio Cloud. And Robot Studio Cloud allows teams from around the world to collaborate with each other on different solutions at the touch of a button. So this makes, you know, those global systems integration companies a lot more agile when they're working on solutions throughout different teams.
Yeah.
So again, I think using different softwares like that, different palletization software for the automatic automatically recognizing pallets and how to best stack the products on those pallets. Vision systems have come a long way in the last, 5-10 years, 3D vision and the way that we can actually scan products coming down conveyor lines. Mm. So I think it's more about the equipment that's available now to systems integrators rather than the integrators themselves.
Yeah.
I think they've had to change the way that they do business a little bit. Obviously now the way that they can reach their customers is so much more diverse using social media, LinkedIn, as you and I both know so well.
Yeah.
So actually finding customers and making those initial relationships probably is a little bit easier than it used to be 10-15 years ago. But I will say there's still absolutely something to be said for getting on the phone, calling those customers,
absolutely
calling your contacts and taking both ways of reaching that contact database. Again, social selling is one side of it, but traditional methods of finding sales is still very, very relevant.
You can't beat it. I guess there's probably been a bit of a skills sort of challenge has there over the, with all the technology coming on board. The integrators will have undoubtedly needed to go through a period of getting more training, for different applications and just understanding the technology. So businesses like ABB must spend quite a lot of time, sort of training and supporting the integrators, your customers in, the sort of span of solutions and competencies of the kit.
Yeah, absolutely. So Milton Keynes, where is our headquarters for robotics in the UK, we have a training school with over 20 robots in there and a full training suite of courses. So we're able to offer this suite of training courses to value providers, systems integrators, end users, anybody really that wants to come and learn how to operate our robots, our controllers, and take specialisms in those robots. So perhaps they want to learn offline programming. Offline programming is a fantastic tool because it gives your customer the ability to simulate a process, use it as part of their selling process to their customer. And then also it's that powerful with our Robot Studio tool that you can actually start to program what will be the real life program before your robots are delivered to site, which will bring down your on-site commissioning time quite substantially.
Yeah.
And that's a cost saving that is really important when you're looking at an automation project, because the time on site can very quickly get a little bit out of hand and can start to take a bit from your bottom line.
Yeah.
So as a customer wanting to be trained on our Robot Studio tool, which then translates into real world robots in both our IRC5 and our Omnicore controller base, it really gives them the opportunity to find ways of doing the hard work early on in the project and then just doing the tweaks later on once the kit is installed on site.
Okay. And with the increase of data in manufacturing, I mean, it's all, IoT, industry 4, it's all about, machines and systems talking to each other, collecting all of this big data.
That's right.
And then something or somebody interpreting it. With all of this increase of data, how does ABB robotics approach the integration of robotics with data analytics and AI to enhance decision making processes?
So obviously we've had a little bit of a conversation about AI previously in the conversation. And I think for us, part of the suite of tools that we've brought to market recently is the likes of our Omnicore controller. So in my timeline with ABB, I've seen our S4C controller that got then upgraded by our IRC5 controller. And most recently, in the last 2 years, we've started to bring through the Omnicore controller. Now, Omnicore is a much more data-driven and device-driven connected controller that gives the customers more opportunity and options for collecting data from the process of the robot and the larger system. And then of course, feeding that back into the system. It's also given us a 20% energy reduction in the consumption of the robot controller. So what we've really done is listen to our customer needs. What is it that they're wanting? They're wanting to really sort of delve into the data and find out, what's happening at the touch of a button.
Yeah.
And we can start to use that with things like when they're looking to do maintenance, it can be predictive maintenance rather than taking the robot line offline and then having to look at preventative maintenance thereon. Predictive maintenance means that we can start to tell the customer when certain parts of their robot perhaps need to be serviced by our UK service team. And it gives us the ability to really meet those that criteria head on, rather than waiting until something fails and then it'd be catastrophic to the production of that particular process.
Yeah.
So one of the big frontiers for us in moving into 2024 is, again, it's that AI feature. It's that way that we really want to see how AI can enhance our product portfolio, from our collaborative robots to our AMRs, as I mentioned earlier, and really start to understand, you know, when AI is used in a sensible, when it's used in a sensible way, and that we're all adhering to the right policies around AI, that it can be a very powerful and useful tool. And it will be something that we as ABB will be putting a lot more of our energy into as times go on.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you mentioned sort of collaborative robots. I mean, you know, I'd never even heard of a cobot probably, I don't know, 8-9 years ago.
Yeah,
I think probably it was just after that, you know, they sort of came onto my radar.
Yeah.
They seem to be, what's the word, populating themselves. They're just sprouting up. They're just growing, aren't they?
You're not wrong.
It's like a family. Every big plant or factory you go to has either got some, or, you know, it's the next thing on the agenda. And I know there's not a sort of one size fits all approach for the deployment of cobots, but they do seem to be a very popular technology option for businesses in manufacturing at the moment.
Yes.
Have you got any sort of tips or sort of strategies to recommend for manufacturing businesses that are thinking about, you know, going down that human robot collaboration route? Because there must be some sort of trepidation from some businesses, you know, that maybe haven't, you know, used robots a lot, or, you know, because it's a, you know, it's an investment, isn't it? You know,
and it is.
When you're at the start of that journey, I suppose it can be a little bit nerve-wracking as to, you know, are you going to get the return? So any advice at all, any sort of strategies for businesses to use when they're considering cobots?
Well, from what I've seen in the marketplace, and I'm in no means a collaborative robot specialist, from what I've seen in the marketplace, you know, what we need to do from the very early stages of a collaborative robot project is understand what is the requirement of that project. Because we have to remember, collaborative robots are inherently safe as a product, but the application for those robots is very different. So we have to look at the whole solution. Is the application safe? Because there's no point in having an inherently safe robot product if the end of arm tooling or the process that it's being integrated into is not safe. You know, that just takes away the reason for having a robot that is able to work around people. So we really need to understand, you know, from the very sort of ground level, you know, is this an application where it will be safe for a robot to work in an environment where people might also be working?
Yeah.
And collaborative robots have really opened up that level of application now. And another way that people are using collaborative robots to their advantage is due to the way that collaborative robots are programmed. You know, there's a lot more ease of programming than there is with some traditional robots.
Okay.
And that's really helping a lot more SME customers open up robotics to their own businesses, you know, because they can deploy the robots a lot quicker and start seeing the return on investment a lot faster. But it doesn't mean that just because these robots are able to do those applications, that they should always be the first choice. Mm. It's not to say they shouldn't be chosen at all, but there are other options available. So more and more, we're seeing a lot more collaborative robots in the palletizing arena, as an example.
Yeah.
Now, there is absolutely nothing wrong with collaborative robots doing palletizing. You know, if the line runs at the speed that matches what the robot can palletize, fantastic.
Yeah.
But you can also use much bigger industrial robots to do palletizing in a collaborative-esque way. And ABB has a technology called SafeMove. And SafeMove is both a safety software, and when integrated with the likes of a light curtain or a floor scanner, we're able to zone how a robot can interact with its environment around it. And that environment could be operators, could be different elements moving through the zones that we've programmed, an AMR. And whilst the robot can carry more weight and can work faster than a collaborative robot, when the zones around the robot are broken, those robots will do two things. When the first zone is broken, it'll go into a safe working speed.
Yep.
And then if the closer zone to the robot is broken, the robot comes to a complete stop. Now, the robot doesn't stop and just go, right, what do I do next? All of its drives remain energized. So as soon as that zone becomes free, it can go back to working at a safe working speed. And then when there's no obstructions at all, it can go back to its, you know, the working speed of the application. So what this allows end users to do is to have not a traditional fully fenced off cell. They can have a U-shaped safety cell, which would allow operators or visitors to the factory to walk past the U-shaped cell without hitting the zones and the robot to not have to stop in its production.
Yeah.
What it also means is if you did need to enter the cell, perhaps to pick up a full pallet and replace it with an empty one, you wouldn't need to use the traditional request to entry systems that we've seen on robotic systems for many, many years.
Yeah.
You can go in there, you can, obviously the cell would be broken with the zones that we discussed, and then you can go in, you can replace the pallet that's just been filled by the robot, come out of that cell, put a new pallet in, and the process starts again. So it's just having that fluidity of using larger robots as well as collaborative robots, which would do the same job, but perhaps wouldn't have to have or wouldn't be able to have the same level of payload and speed. So it just really depends on the application and the kind of product that's being picked.
Yeah.
We've also seen just recently a lot of collaborative robots in the welding sphere.
Yes.
And again, you have to look at this in a way that, is the application collaborative, or what is the advantages of using a collaborative robot over a traditional industrial? And again, I think it comes down to how the person is cooperating with that robot. So ABB has put a tool out that allows customers to guide the robot in a really, really natural way, and to be able to use a really intuitive programming tool that not only moves the robot to the right position, you know, based on what the operator needs to do, but when it's moved to that position, it automatically writes the code back to the robot controller. So in a lot of cases, you're not even having to get onto the robot teach pendant and teach the program path. You're actually teaching it by moving it to where it needs to go. And then we have certain instructions that allow us to say, right, we've reached our position. Here's where you start the process. So it might be torch on. And then when you get to the end of that process, torch off. Just by using a small bezel system at the end of the robot arm, it allows us to start creating some really strong foundations of a robot program by interacting with that robot. And you couldn't do that with an industrial robot. So therefore, using collaboratives in a much more intuitive sense does give us the opportunity to use them in industries where perhaps, you know, we wouldn't have before. It would have been all traditional industrial robots, or even before that, a lot more manual welding. So it really has opened up how companies can introduce welding robots to their processes in much smaller applications. It could be small job shops rather than large manufacturing industries. So it is a real positive having collaborative robots in our marketplace.
Brilliant. And you know, I suppose that's just one of the ways that we may as a country get over the shortage of skilled labor. You know, welding is a skill. It takes years to become a really proficient welder, and there's always seems to be a shortage. Again, robotics and automation taking up a bit of the slack. Yeah, that's great. And what about reshoring, nearshoring? I mean, we've heard a lot about this the last couple of years since the pandemic. We've had all these supply chain disruptions, Suez Canal, we've got all this nonsense going on in the Red Sea at the moment. What role do you see robotics playing in boosting reshoring or nearshoring manufacturing operations, Steve?
I mean, you've mentioned some of the, as well, the, I say key highlights, you've mentioned some of the biggest problems we face in the last 5 to 6 years. Brexit. The pandemic, the blocking of the Suez Canal, even up to current day with the problems in the Red Sea, that's had a huge impact on supply chain to companies that are bringing in products from all over the world. And if they're not able to use that particular passage of the Red Sea, it's making products arrive weeks later than they were planned to be delivered.
Yeah.
So we as ABB are very lucky, as we've got multiple manufacturing facilities around the world to really sort of help the local markets and to provide products for local markets. So we have 3 robot manufacturing facilities, one in Sweden, one in China, and one in America. So our local markets can be well serviced by these manufacturing facilities. Now, when it comes to actually reshoring processes, I think over these last 5-6 years where we've had this amount of different disruption from different elements of our day-to-day lives, you know, it's been interesting to see how we as a manufacturing nation have embraced bringing certain processes back to the UK. I mean, it's really exciting to see so much battery manufacture planned to take place and already taking place. You know, bringing in those sorts of applications to the UK is a real boost to our, it's really going to be a boost to our output as a manufacturing nation. Yeah, some big companies think twice about how they're going to be able to stay current.
Yeah.
Now, it's a real shot in the arm for the UK because, as you'll know, we are one of the richest countries with one of the biggest economies. I think we're fifth or sixth in the world now. Yet we sit outside the top 20 robot using countries in the world.
Yeah.
It's a bit shocking, really. I mean, we are lagging quite far behind. In the most recent IFR data, it said that we, as a manufacturing nation, have around 111 robots per 10,000 people in the manufacturing industries employed, where the global average is around 141.
Yeah.
So we are quite far behind where the average is, let alone becoming one of the leaders. And when you look at the leading countries like Korea, Germany, they are just light years ahead. And you have to ask yourself, why aren't we using robots more? We have one of the best and the strongest economies. Okay. Maybe not today as we see it, but globally, we are renowned as one of the leading economies of the world. So why aren't we embracing technology that can allow us to further ourselves, increase our output as a manufacturing nation, and actually start growing our reputation once again as an engineering nation?
Yeah.
So I think by reshoring and nearshoring processes, as you mentioned, we've gone through a heck of a change with the world over the last 5 to 6 years, but that's something to be embraced. That's something that we can use to our advantage and come out of stronger in the years to come. So, I'm really passionate about this. We really need to see that robotic number improve year on year. And we're only going to do that by companies understanding where they would be able to take advice and take help. So there are many ways they can do that in the UK. As you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, I sit on the BARA Council, which is the British Automation and Robotics Association. And that's now part of the rebranded Automate UK, which is a fantastic group of companies that is really there for manufacturing companies of all sizes to really go have an association that is listening to their problems and trying to do what we can as an association to listen and then be able to point people in the right direction. So through the Automate UK banner, we're able to offer training courses for certain things like, systems integration. We're able to offer systems integrators the ability to become certified by the association as an integrator. So when end users are looking for automation projects, they are able to see, okay, who are the companies that we should be dealing with from a systems integration point of view?
Yeah.
We've got the MTC and the Catapult Centers, fantastic places to go and really perhaps learn from the experts where you can start your automation journey. We've got Make UK, another fantastic resource. We've got Made Smarter. Made Smarter is an incredible initiative to try and help companies find different ways of funding their automation journeys.
Yeah.
And then we've got companies like ourselves, ABB. We can talk to you about the product. We can come and do line side assessments, find the best way for you to be able to automate your process. We can introduce you to fully accredited ABB value providers who are systems integration partners to ABB that can even use our logo because we have that level of depth of relationship with them.
Yeah.
And we know they're basically an extension of our own sales team. So there are many, many ways in which we can solve the problems that a lot of UK manufacturers have, or we can break down the barriers that are perceived by a lot of UK manufacturers. And the truth is the opportunity to automate is now, and it's never been more important because there's just so much uncertainty and there's so much instability in global markets. Let's take a little bit of control of that. Let's start helping ourselves. We have the abilities in the UK. We have the history of being an engineering automation nation. So let's really start to be proud of it and let's start to embrace it a lot more.
Absolutely. And, most of the people I know on LinkedIn are, very, very passionate about UK manufacturing, want to see us doing better. And in fact, a couple of my previous guests on Insights from Manufacturing, you know them very well, George Thompson at BARA and Mike Wilson at the MTC. And, the three of you have all, highlighted just how far behind some of these other nations we are in terms of robotic adoption, per capita. So, everybody seems to know about robotics and automation. And I know we had this super deduction, we've got you know, high interest rates, we've got the inflation, you know, businesses want to hold on to their cash, we've got an election looming, all of these sort of things do make business owners and executive boards a little bit cautious, you know, but I think there's a huge opportunity. And I don't work for a robotics or automation company. I'm totally neutral, but whether you were working for ABB or another provider, it's not just about boosting your sales. It's, you know, there is a sincere, genuine improvement there for the whole country, for our economy, through our fantastic manufacturing sector. We've got to get more productive, haven't we? We've got to make things easier, safer, more efficient. So let's keep talking about it. I love it when we have these passionate conversations.
I just want to say as well, it's funny that the two individuals that you mentioned at the top of that. So Mike Wilson being one of them. Mike Wilson is the reason that I'm probably sat here today. He was the gentleman who employed me at ABB Robotics. He was my first sales manager, my first mentor. So I have a lot to thank Mike for. And as a voice for robotics and automation, I don't think you could meet anybody more passionate. So yeah, I just want to have a bit of a shout out there to Mike, because he is a true driving force of robotics in this country.
Absolutely. I agree with you wholeheartedly. So where or what do you think might be the next breakthrough or advancement in robotics technology that could have a transformative impact on manufacturing? It is that, you know, you've mentioned the AMRs. There must be other things in the pipeline. We probably won't get to hear about them until they're, you know, almost ready to launch. But are there any little snippets that you could give away without sort of breaching any confidentiality situations? What's coming next from a technology point of view in the industry?
Again, I mean, using that AI piece, we've been investing in companies like SevenSense and MeshMind. So MeshMind will be the R&D sector of our B&R part of our business.
Yep.
Which will probably help us propel our machine-centric robotics program. So machine-centric robotics is something to watch out for.
Okay.
That will be a really interesting tool for systems integrators moving forward. We've also had a very close relationship and partnership with an AI company called Covariant. So you can see there's a trend here with ABB. It's AI-based companies. It's ways in which we can use different parts of AI technology across our whole portfolio, whether that be collaborative robots, machine-centric robotics, AMRs, picking technology, vision. You know, all of these different elements of AI have a very deep effect on what will be the next level of technology that we bring to market.
Yeah.
And one thing we like to do for our value providers each year is we have what we call a value provider conference that we go to in different European cities. And it's here that we give those little teases and those little snippets of what ABB has been up to and what we'll be releasing to market in the coming year. So perhaps that might be a new robot variant. It might be a whole family of robots. But we always have a little snippet that we like to bring to market at that event to really get the imagination of our closest systems partners, you know, get them thinking about how they could use that new kind of robot, how they could use that new kind of technology within their own processes.
So lots to look out for. And again, I'm assuming that, you know, at the trade shows and exhibitions, you know, whichever ones you're going to be exhibiting at, there's going to be lots of things announced as we go along throughout the year anyway, I guess.
There are, I mean, ABB has got some fantastic digital offerings that will come to market. Our Omnivance offering, our, as I say, Robot Studio Cloud, Robot Studio Twin. So we've got some incredible digital offerings that are going to be a huge part of our business going forward. And again, it's all data driven. It's all digital. It's all AI. It's all things that, you know, that our industry is crying out for.
Yeah.
But that's built on the backbone of our core technology, our robotics, our industrial heritage. As you'll well know, and I think as we'll go on to, ABB's robotics is 50 years old this year. So we've done a lot in that time, and you know, we've got a lot more to go to do moving forward. But 50 years in the industry, you know, it really does make us a leader. We produced our first industrial robot, all electric robot, to market in 1974, and that was the IRB6. Since then, we've built on that technology. We've built up our portfolio of products. We were the first company to commercialize the Delta robot. Not many people know that. We did that in the 90s.
Yeah.
And since then, we have been the world's number one in Delta robots with over 100,000 sold globally. So we have got such a rich heritage. So for us to celebrate 50 years of our company this year, is going to be a really, really fantastic event. And not only is it 50 years since we brought our first robot to market, it's also 20 years since we started our value provider program. So over the years, we've had some value providers there from day one, and we've got some value providers that we're in the process of authorizing now. So we're going to be inviting all those value providers, past and present, end users, to a fantastic event in Sweden later this year, where we're going to really sort of go through our history and show you, this is what we've achieved, this is what we've done, but then also give a sneak peek of where we're going next. Because without our customers being on that journey with us, we're just a technology company. We really need those customers to drive those technologies into the industries that they service. So yeah, so we're really, really looking forward to how that event's going to go down. You can imagine 50 years from now, what's automation and robotics going to look like? I might not be here to see it, but I can imagine it's going to be absolutely incredible, the technology that will be available in that time. ABB has been a pioneer since the very start, and robotics is just going to be one of the most important things for our manufacturing nations going forward. And I think the only other thing I mentioned about your previous question is that sneak peeks of what might be coming around the corner, service robotics. And that's all I'll say.
Right. Okay. You heard it here. Right. Service robotics. Well, 50 years, what a fantastic heritage. And as you say, everybody that's in and around ABB, or, whether they're using ABB products or whether you're working at ABB, every single person in that sort of chain is having their own input into the legacy of ABB for the future. As you say, we're not going to be here in 50, 60 years. Well, I won't be anyway. what a fantastic part of the manufacturing sector. We can't do without robots. So let's keep talking about them. Steve, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you today. That wraps up our episode this week. So I hope you've enjoyed the discussion.
I have immensely.
Good. It's been really insightful. I always love to learn a bit more as well through these conversations. So thank you again, Steve Banton from ABB Robotics UK. Thank you for listening, and look out for the next episode of Insights for Manufacturing. See you next time, and bye-bye.